Welcome to the Plant Spirit Podcast on connecting with plant consciousness and the healing wisdom of nature. If you'd like to learn more on how to communicate directly with plants, visit www.learnplantlanguage.com to register for the free workshop. That's www.learnplantlanguage.com. I'm your host, Sarah Artemisia, and I'm excited to introduce our next guest to the show today. Nikki Darrell is the founder of the Plant Medicine School, and she's been working with plants for over four decades. She's a plant scientist, practitioner of herbal medicine, aromatic medicine, and body work, and she's also an author, gardener, and educator. Nikki is devoted to the recovery of our societal and cultural connection to the plant beings and our kin in nature, bringing herbal medicine back into the center of our communities. She also co-facilitates the Nature Resonance with Alex Duffy, where she helps people become re-enchanted with their place in the community of nature, in harmony with the seen and unseen beings. So Nikki, thank you so much for being here. Such an honor to have you here, and I'm excited for our conversation today.
Thanks for inviting me, Sarah. It's lovely to be here.
So wonderful. I just love your deep connection with the plants, with the green ones, with all of nature, and would love to just dive in with a big, big, juicy question here, which is, are plants conscious and sentient?
Yes, it's the easy answer. It's fascinating. I have worked in plant science since I was in my 20s. And although I don't work sort of in academia anymore, it's something that I'm still very involved in. And to see that there's actually the emerging science of plant neurobiology and so on, and the big debates that go on there, and how lovely it is to see people in mainstream science saying, well, look, plants do all these things that are considered to be what mean that we identify a being as conscious. They're doing them. So although plants have different anatomy and physiology, they are displaying conscious behavior. And then there's more emerging, again, from sort of mainstream science showing, well, plants are sentient because they respond to different inputs and so on. And when we put that on one side and then see how in so many traditional cultures there would be descriptions of the plants being our elders and the plants being our teachers and so on. Actually, when we're in the womb, when we're forming our bones, the little cartilage plates do exactly like that cell turgor thing of pushing out with fluid, the same way plants hold themselves up. So when we're in the womb, there's these different things that show who some of our ancestors are, the stage when we have gills and so on. So this is the bit showing that we have sort of plant ancestors. And there's absolutely no question about it. The number of people I know who would not be sort of into plant medicine and so on initially, but they'll say, you know, I was going for a walk the other day and I swear the plants were communicating with me. You know, am I going crazy? Because my book's called Conversations with Plants, I may have more people asking me those questions than the average person, but people going like, I think they're communicating with me. I think we have to accept to communicate means that we are sentient and conscious. So if the plants are communicating, then yes, they are definitely sentient and conscious. And some of them have been around for a very long time as well, and they've seen a lot and they have a lot of wisdom. So yes.
Absolutely. And yeah, I love how you were just sharing the bit about the plant ancestors and how interesting it is to see how, as we develop in the womb, that we can really understand this microcosmic nature of our ancestral lineage on the planet, which is so fascinating. And I'm curious to hear a bit more about, in your experience, how do plants and people communicate with each other?
well. I think there's a few things with this that are important to realize. Obviously, it's a non-verbal communication. It's not normally, although we did have one student who came in from the garden one day and said, "What's that plant over there?" And I said, "It's called wood betony." And she said, "It's amazing. That plant just said to me, my name is wood betony." And she didn't know the name of the plant. So they can sometimes manage to communicate in that way. But it's non-verbal communication. And actually, a lot of our communication between each other is non-verbal. And a lot of it would be like around the heart resonance. So our heart is an electromagnetic radiator and receiver. And the plants work in that way too. And this intelligence, the heart brain, if you like, the way it communicates is often by association with memories and so on. So people will be sitting with a plant and they might say, "I remember being in my granny's kitchen," or "I remembered this," or "I remembered a song or a line from a poem or a picture," or that kind of thing. And what that signifies for me is this, that, or the other. Or it could be a particular color. Or sometimes the heart is also very much an emotional center. So people will experience an emotion. And that can be quite amusing, like the guy who was out talking to the mullein and came over and said, "What's that plant called?" He was crying. And he was like, "What's that plant called? I've forgotten its name." And I went, "That's mullein." And he went, "Oh, I knew it was, but I forgot and I got it wrong." And it was like, that really describes, you know, so mullein is good for the kind of grief that we feel when we feel like the little kid who got it all wrong and couldn't get it right. And I was like, that's really cool. Or somebody who, I mean, it may be sort of real giggly energy, or it may be something more like, I remember somebody with a myrtle plant coming in and going, they were talking like you talk to a little baby, that soft, gentle voice. And I'm like, well, that's really cool because myrtle's really good for little babies. And that kind of energy. Or sometimes people will sit with a plant and say, I couldn't settle. My mind was zipping here, there, and everywhere. And then you just go, they were sitting with some skullcap or something like that, that will calm the mind. So it's by association, but it's also by their aromas. It are important because aroma is very much, again, connected into that area of our brain. By their taste, because that connects into the whole gut brain, and by their appearance. I often use the example of an angelica plant. So angelica has these huge leaves that it's like good, healthy lungs, big open lungs. It has the red stems, and it's a really good blood cleanser and builder. And then the halos of the flowers, which is very much like that protection of our psyche. And then these big roots that help, you know, it's like the anchoring down. And it really is almost like holding up flashcards. This is what I'm good for. So they do actually describe with how they look, who they are as well. So I think there's many facets and layers to the ways they communicate. And for different people, sometimes tune into different aspects. Because it's very important to realize, I mean, why would nature have bothered to create so many different humans? You know, we're all different. And it means that we're bringing more possibilities, if you like, to the story, to the earth kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. And really how nature provides such an incredible mirror for this celebration of diversity and the importance of, yes, celebrating being different and working together, collaborating together, that any healthy functioning ecosystem will show us how to do this. Love that you just brought up the heart resonance piece too, and how there are so many ways to connect with nature. There's so many different ways to connect with nature, and that the invitation is to really find our own way that really resonates with us most deeply. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you were talking about mullein, and was thinking about the grief that seems to be very present in the social emotional layers of the human experience right now. And particularly, there's so much grief around the fragmentation of ecosystems across the planet. And I'm curious, in your experience and understandings, do humans really have a role in planetary ecosystems? And if so, how?
Well, they do. I have no question about that. Because we have seen, we hear these beautiful stories about, you know, say that there's a guy in India who, has planted this incredible rainforest in an area that was, had become a desert. When we think about the Amazon rainforest, it has been realized that that was actually a co-creation between the plants and the people. And some of the other major forests, the Persian walnut forests. When we look at people like the Kapayo Indians, who, when the environmentalists and anthropologists first arrived in that area of the Brazilian basin, they thought that they were like, well, this is really unusual, this ecosystem. And then they realized it was because the people were managing and caring for the ecosystem. We see this in sort of marine environments, so many places. And so we realize that individuals have the capacity to be part of the caretaking and the looking after in an ecosystem, moving the plants around to where they want to be. You know, it's like that whole thing. It's, you know, sometimes people will look in our garden and go, did you do a planting scheme there? I'm like, no, we moved a few of them who'd planted themselves in the places. It's like move some of them other way over there or whatever. But when we see, you know, with our opposable thumbs and all the rest of it and our capacities, what we can do to, you know, look after the tree that's got a bit of a broken branch, to unchoke the river when some things have fallen into it. And yes, there is all the devastation that is occurring, but a lot of what drives that is it's against what people actually really want when they slow down. And I think that's a big part of it. People are moving at this unnaturally fast speed, which shuts them off. They go into a bubble. They don't notice things around them. But at the same time, you know, there's plenty of studies showing that when people are in an environment with more trees and greenery, it's better for their psycho-emotional health, allergies, all of these things reduce. And I think that this is what we realize when people are removed from nature and end up in an office or a factory for 40 plus hours a week and so on, then bits of them shut down. And when they get back into nature, get those reminders of who they are, it can start out a little bit like, the, you know, say a caged animal sort of thing that's only used to a sort of concrete floor in its cage. And initially the soil feels a bit funny, but after a while, people's senses wake up and they start noticing and that kind of thing. I think this was very interesting a couple of years ago when people were at home the whole time. And so many people, not just our students, but just ordinary people, were like in the garden, the sales of seeds and everything shot through the roof. And people were allowed to go for their walks in this or that region. And so they were going out for their walks and suddenly noticing things. And there was a huge rise in this sort of like, oh my goodness, there's all of this out here, a renewed interest in sort of the environment and looking after nature. And we have things like that. There's a project in Ireland called the Pollinator Project. And all of a sudden they had loads more people saying, we want to put in our pollinator garden and all of this kind of thing. But when people are at that rushing speed, it shuts down that whole periphery and it closes down their senses. So we do have to slow down to remember, I think.
Yeah. That's so essential. Even as you were describing that, I was seeing this visual of the difference of being in a car, driving on a highway, and the side, the periphery is blurry. We can't really notice versus walking and how much more we can notice with that. And even before that, though, what you were just sharing about how we are a part of the ecosystem, that we can be caretakers, that this is how humans have been a part of nature for as long as we've been here, and that there is this invitation and opportunity to re-engage with nature in this way as an active participant, just like our ancestors were, just like all of nature is doing all of the time. And so that feels so pivotal to the next stage of human evolution to me, and is a huge part of the reason that this podcast is even in existence. But the other thing that you really were talking about is that aspect of the importance of slowing down. And I'm curious if any tips or suggestions come to mind for you of simple things, like for folks who really are super busy, it's like the schedule's packed to the brim, you know, jobs, kids to take care of, things to do, places to go, kind of a thing. What are some simple tips that people could really bring into their daily lives to help slow down and really start to reconnect with nature like this?
Okay, so I guess, you know, it's one of those things like, how much time can you spare in the day? If it's just like 10 minutes, then if you can get out to the garden or get off the bus or stop early and walk, or in your lunch break, is there a green space you can go get to easily? This kind of thing. Or if you can't, then do it like plants actually in the environment and take the time to sit quietly. And I think the first thing is just that grounding, right? Okay, I'm sitting here, get my feet on the ground and do some breathing. And it's not any kind of particular breath. It's just become aware that you are breathing, literally. And not try and force your breathing or anything, but become aware of it. What I love saying to people is actually put your hands on your belly, because that helps deepen the breathing, but it also connects us with our energy center in the belly. A few breaths into the belly, a few breaths in with the hands up over the heart, and noticing the heart and lungs working together. And it's like there's ways you can go from there. You can imagine the roots down, you know, from through your feet down into the earth, or the energy centers, like on the palms of our hands and the soles of our feet, we have energy centers, and the ones on our hands are very much the heart energy flowing out. So that can be a nice thing to notice. And the ones on the soles of our feet are about connecting with the earth energy and the flow that goes down into the earth and back up into us. So, and that didn't take long for me to describe that, but it's like doing that. And then maybe just that little bit of what we say to the students is we do a series of exercises, which starts with the breathing and scanning through the body. And then we do some of the slow walking movements. Thich Nhat Hanh made those very well known. And encouraging the sensory acuity, noticing what can you smell and see and hear and all of that. And the little bit of heart resonance. And we take maybe 40 minutes doing the sequence when they're learning it. But then we say, well, you know, of that sequence, if you're going for a walk in the park, instead of rushing through the park, why don't you do the bit of slow walking? Just for 10 minutes, slow it down and notice that what happens with your senses. Or if you are, you know, waiting for the bus or standing in the queue, you can do that little bit of like, okay, breathe, you know, imagine your nice little protective bubble. And then I'm going to do my breathing and my grounding and breathe into the belly. That kind of thing. It's like do little stages of it. Definitely having a couple of plants in your environment helps as well. Like, I have no question about that. And I think one of the things that really taught me about how do you do these things in little stages is when you have small kids, you don't have the luxury necessarily of being able to spend an hour doing something. So it's like, okay, I'm in the bathroom now, I'm brushing my teeth. While I'm brushing my teeth, I will do a little bit of breathe and tune in and so on. So it doesn't have to be this big extended thing. And I think that that makes it more accessible for people. For sure. Or making their cup of herb tea, and rather than just glugging it back, it's like, okay, this is an opportunity to actually smell the tea, taste the tea, roll it around in my mouth, think about the plant that this tea came from, and so on. So bringing those little moments of sort of ritual or whatever you want to call it into the day. Same with eating as well. It's another time where when you slow down and have that gratitude for how the plants or the beings have produced this food, you become a lot more aware of what you're eating as well, which is good. But so that's part of it as well, bringing our awareness to situations and to ourselves, I think it's really important.
Yeah. And in what you shared there too, sometimes even if there's no extra time, just bringing the mindful awareness to what you're already doing. That could be so valuable.
Yeah.
So great. And can you tell us a bit more about the importance of really noticing the effects of seasons on both humans and the plant beings as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a really interesting one. It's funny. I mentioned that my mom came from the Caribbean island, Grenada. And the first time I got to visit there, I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's beautiful here. And then I went, but they don't have seasons. And I love the seasons because it's that whole cycle of how in the spring, it's, and you can see it in people, like the energy rises up the same way the sap rises up in the plants and the trees. So the energy rises up and we start moving and deciding what we want to do. And you see the plants waking up as well as us. And you can feel the after effects of maybe being in a more stagnant place and a need to maybe have more cleansing food and move more and so on. And then, you know, it comes into the sort of summertime and there's all this amazing activity and the bees and the butterflies and the birds and everything buzzing around doing their stuff while the plants are doing their flowering and everything. And then there's that sense of as it starts to change into autumn and the plants are letting go of their leaves, which is actually in the same way when we're doing that sort of elimination process. It's not a passive activity. The plants are actively letting go of those leaves, and that provides like the almost like the placenta for the little seeds to drop onto and so on. So you have that sort of that harvesting and this gathering, and then the time of rest. And it's like there's a microcosm of that in the day as well. So in the evening, we are tired and it's time to sort of contemplate what we've done in the day, what we feel about it, then rest and dream and wake up inspired, and then through our activities, and then again back to the contemplative, and then sleep and dream. That's actually a really important ecological function of human beings, dreaming. It's very important for us to dream. I didn't mention that earlier, but it's part of what we do. And when we realize that and make our dreams, make sure that we think about what we're dreaming about and make sure it's feeding nature and feeding the world. This is very important. But yeah, with this cycle, so I suppose in this part of the world, we would have the cycle of in the spring, we have the lighting of the flame in bulk, which is actually at the beginning of February, and it's before spring really happens, but it's that knowing it's going to happen and realizing there's what's happening under the soil and the seeds are there and they're thinking about you know, it will be time to germinate at some stage, and all the little hibernating insects and so on are sort of feeling for the signals, if you like. And then we have this sort of Bieltno, which is very much the fertility and that aspect. And then we have Lammas or Lunacy, which is very much starting the harvesting, bringing things into the home and all the making and sort of preparing for the time that starts in at Samhain. And it's interesting because Samhain would have been heading into the winter, and this would be the time where a lot of the healing work would be done and the storytelling, because that's actually part of our ecological function as well, to make stories and tell them. And the healing work would be done in the winter, and dreaming, very important. What are we dreaming for? And then there would be the midwinter celebrations. So different name for that, depending on what tradition you are in. But there would always have been this preparing of a feast in the winter, which is an important thing to do, and then get kind of slow down again, which is very different to what people do now, which is a lot of rushing around rather than gathering with the nearest and dearest and having this very beautiful time together. I have a friend who is from France and married to someone from Ireland. And the husband said the first time he went over to France for the Christmas holidays, and he couldn't believe this sort of 12-hour meal. And it was like, and now, you know, eating, like, this is the artichoke hearts and this incredible appreciation of each of the things being eaten and really aware, and the gratitude and all of this being put into it. So I feel that becoming aware of what's happening in the different seasons, what the plants are doing, and how the plants, like, for instance, the elderflower comes at exactly the right time of year to help with hay fever. And it's an amazing plant for hay fever. Or the elderberry in the autumn is very much helps our immune function and the immune function of the birds. So that whole thing of, like, no, we don't strip all the elderberries. Some of those are for the birds to look after them through the winter and so on. And the more we explore all of this, we see there's so much going on. There's so much to explore. We've forgotten a lot of things that our ancestors used to know. Not everybody has forgotten, but a lot of people have forgotten. But we still have that wisdom, and the plants still know it all. So when we sit with them, they help us to remember as well. So that, you know, there's all sorts of amazing different sort of stories and traditions. But I do feel we're at a time where it's good to get back to that approach with humility and gratitude and listen to what the plants are saying now, because a lot of them have been put into little boxes as well. Their characters have been limited. So, you know, like feverfew became the plant for migraine, and all the rest of the aspects and personality of the feverfew being were forgotten, and milk thistle became the one for repairing the liver. But milk thistle does so much more than that and has a much bigger personality than that. And I do feel that the plants are recognizing, but the plants know that we're at a time where, yeah, there's quite a lot evolving, and there's lots to look at, and they're revealing different aspects of their personalities and different ways of helping us to realize. I think a lot of the grief you mentioned earlier comes from a feeling of disempowerment. But there are many ways in which, when we gather together with the rest of nature and gather together in community, there's so much we can achieve. And when we think about that, collaborating with other species, I mean, like, for instance, in Ireland, there's the little black Irish bees. They very much co-evolved with the humans. And there's all this sort of thing about talking with the bees and telling the bees how things are going on. When we were moving up here, we had a colony of bees living in the roof where we used to live. That's where they decided to live. And it was like, I had to go and explain to the bees we were moving. And one of my neighbors was a beekeeper, and they said, well, we can gather a swarm and maybe you can take it with you. And they tried to gather the swarm, but it was a late swarm in the year, and it didn't make it. But it was quite kind of interesting, sort of leaving the bee neighbors behind as well, and then saying, well, they'll be fine, you know, and some of the plants that couldn't move with me. But yes, I probably went off on a bit of a ramble there, but anyway.
All connected, though. And I love what you were just sharing about the importance of humility and gratitude and listening, how that those are all such incredibly important aspects to coming back into connection with nature, into connection with ourselves, really. And that aspect of what you were just sharing about how we can put plants in boxes, that there has been kind of a tendency to move more in that direction. And to me, that also speaks so much to how we also can tend to do that with people, even people that we know and love very deeply. There can be this tendency to put someone in a box, put a plant in a box. And even going back to what you were sharing earlier about the importance of dreaming, and certainly dreaming is an incredibly out of the box experience. And I was curious to hear more about that, how in your experience, how can becoming more aware of our dreams really support our work with the plants?
Okay, so I suppose I don't just mean dreams when you go to sleep, but I mean like sometimes that, you know, during the day, if we're lucky, I suppose, and we get time to those times where we just sort of drift off, and the inspirations can come in, if you like. So it's like the imbass, that inspiration that comes from nature around us. So we realize that our dreams are not just us, but nature helps with that. And being willing to do that, rather than sort of thinking that it's all about a creative genius inside ourselves, which some people would say that's an insane way to think, you know, or it will drive you insane. Whereas when we are in, it's very much about the humility and gratitude as well, and say, okay, thank you for that inspiration and that dreaming, because we, if you like, we'd sort of almost do a translation of things. So those little inspirations come in, and the next thing we're either thinking, wow, this is how to make the most gorgeous birthday cake ever. You know, they can be very sort of ordinary inspirations like that, or it can be an inspiration. Actually, this is the project that will really help our community with their community garden, or this will... inspirations about all sorts of things. And you know, this is something that people have talked about who have maybe initiated some quite large projects and so on. They said it started by me sitting down and dreaming, and I had this little inspiration, and then I felt inspired, and it woke up that sort of passion to do something about this. And I feel when we're embedded in like the nature council around us, then that means we've got this capacity for dreams that are so much more inspired and have so many more voices in them, if you like, of what will be good, you know. So rather than sitting in a space and going, I think it should be, again, back to planting schemes and so on, rather than going, right, okay, I'm going to draw this on paper, which is one of the things that we had to do in university, was draw garden designs. It's like, no, actually go and sit in the place and feel into it. Or if you're in an area where there's something that needs some work to help the environment, like, then listening to the other inspirations really helps.
Yeah, I love what you just shared about really being embedded in the nature council that's all around us, and the value of listening to the inspirations. It's so key. Certainly that has been massively enriching for my life, the direction and things that have unfolded as a result of that are, you know, magic beyond all measure. And that aspect that you shared earlier too, about how the plants have so much to teach us right now. And I'd love to hear more about how, in your experience, why is plant medicine really central to the healing of our planet right now?
I think there's loads of reasons. I mean, the plants, just they're not just healers for the humans. It's amazing what plants can do to help with soil remediation, for instance. You know, when you've got in a meadow area or whatever, what the plants will do to help with the soil, along with obviously the mycorrhizae and all of the little ones in the soil, but what plants can do to help with animal health, so that we're not using these really, you know, strong substances unnecessarily. And water remediation, you know, what they've shown about, you know, the plants which will help cleanse pollution. So in, like in various areas of the tropics, things like water hyacinths and so on. But, you know, there's so many different stories, or clean, how plants will help clear heavy metals from the soil, help regenerate, help clean the air, help absorb the carbon dioxide. You know, plants do it all. And if there had never been plants, there definitely wouldn't be any humans either, because it was plants that made the atmosphere breathable. So there's the sort of very physical things like that. But also, it's that whole thing that we've touched on, that, you know, how plants are conscious and sentient. They're deeply rooted in the soil, and yet they're reaching up to the stars. And when we slow down and sit with them, they really help us remember that we have things in common with them, and that this whole thing around, as you know, you mentioned, the healthy ecosystem has this beautiful diversity and sharing and so on. So the plants, there's some very practical ways in which they heal, but I do feel, from what I've seen with people, this whole thing of how they can heal some of the kind of psycho-emotional and those kind of wounds that are so prevalent because of the societies we live in, particularly in sort of in the English-speaking world and so on. There's a lot of people feeling very uncomfortable, and the plants are really helpful for that. And yeah, they help us slow down. There's so many reasons why the plants, but just in practical ways, the way that they will heal different environments and help with some of the damage that's there.
Yeah, so important. Well, thank you for sharing that. And clearly you are so connected to the plants in your life's work. And I'd love to hear, how would you say that the plants really support you in your life's work?
That's a difficult question. I feel there've been a couple of times in my life where the plants have really sort of saved my life, would be one thing. So that was, and that gave me a real sort of desire to be an advocate, if you like, for why plants are so cool and such amazing being. I'm working with plants all the time. So it's kind of a difficult question. Like, we're surrounded by plants. We work with the plants the whole time. My whole life work is either, we have fields here and we're working growing the plants, and then we're working with the students with the plants, and then we're making and experimenting with different ways of making medicines from the plants. It's like, yeah, me and the plants work alongside each other the whole time, really. It's like, it's because it's a way of life for me, you know. It really is. And yeah. I think that's probably the best answer. Yeah.
I love that. Well, thanks so much, Nikki. And so tell us, how can people find out more about you and your work?
Okay. I wrote a book that Aeon Books published in 2020, which is called Conversations with Plants. So that's like a sort of condensed, sort of abridged version of a bit of what we teaching our apprenticeship. Obviously, it's just a small book, so it doesn't have everything in it, but it's kind of a nice book, and it's got some of the conversations with plants. So I've written another book about for them about the use of essential oils, because I really like essential oils. I think they're pretty cool. Then we have a website called the Plant Medicine School. We have quite a bit of different writings and so on up there. It's having a bit of a makeover at the moment, but very soon it will have a lot of open source material on it, including the nature resonance sequence we use with our students. There's going to be a toolkit for people to use for themselves. We do have a page on Facebook for people who go there. But yeah, the website, and as I say, there's the book if people would like to read a little bit more about how we approach working with the plants and the connection between plants and humans and that kind of thing.
Wonderful. Well, Nikki, thank you so much for joining us today. Just such a delight to connect with you, a kindred plant spirit lover, and I just absolutely love what you're doing with the plants. It's amazing, and so thank you for your life's work with them. It's really incredible.
Thanks so much for inviting me along, Sarah. It's been a real pleasure to have a little bit of time to talk to you. Thanks a million.
Thank you. And thanks so much for listening and joining us today on the Plant Spirit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and please follow to subscribe, leave a review, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.